the risk of oversimplifying a very complex subject, let me say that our ability to extract wealth from our forests exceeds our understanding of them. Our sense of the connections with all that comprises a forest and our ability to restore forests with any perspective of effectiveness. Connecting the dots is what we should do. The problem is that many of us cannot, will not see the dots, let alone connect them in any meaningful sense. We do not sustain the forest sustains us, and a forest is more than trees. Fish, or native fish in particular, are the gold seal of water quality, and to me, they are the metric of the health of watersheds. So it follows that as the watersheds go, so do the fish. If the fish are going, something must be wrong with our forest management. So I'm going to give you a perspective on fish to help you understand and answer the question, what's all the fuss about in terms of logging in the Old Bend watershed? So let me begin by telling you a fish story. Mark Twain said once that don't tell fish stories where people know you, and don't tell them where they know the fish. Well, having worked in this area for a long time, I think I do know the fish. And so I'm going to begin with something that goes back to our glacial epoch about 10,000 years ago next Tuesday. Ice covered where we're sitting tonight and went all the way to the mountains. Fish found their way from glacial refuges and are now occupying most of the rivers that flow out of the mountains. Bull trout on top, Rocky Mountain whitefish in the middle, and West Slope cutthroat trout were really the only native fish species that we have had in our rivers and streams from the mountains. And these three species found homes and persisted in a dynamic, arguably tough environment. They rolled the storms, they rolled the fires, they rolled the floods, they rolled the drought, they rolled the erosion. They rolled the landslides into their genetic makeup. So all of the challenges to trout survival occurred within a range of natural variation. And that's something I'm going to talk about subsequently, is the difference between the range of natural variation and what we've done to the landscape. Our memory of what we've done to the land is short and it's incomplete. Yet without such knowledge, we can't grasp how much we've changed the landscape and how much more we're likely to change it if the present trends persist. Northwest Mounted Police officers stationed in both Calgary and Pincher Creek made rudimentary assessments of fish populations and reported on their findings in 1890. And one of them wrote this: "When I fished first about 14 years ago, the rivers and streams teemed with fish. Now it is much different." So this is the beginning of a shifting benchmark for trout populations in our systems. These anglers, proudly posing with their catch of native cutthroat trout from Willow Creek near Fort McLeod, the year is 1902, and they have about 40 pounds of cutthroat trout. Today, Willow Creek in that vicinity isn't even considered a trout stream anymore, let alone contains native cutthroat trout. Historical distribution maps of cutthroat trout existing in most of the Bow and Old Man watersheds show them going down to below Calgary and to Lethbridge. This is pre-1900. Today, cutthroat trout occupy less than 5% of their historic range, and provincially, even bull trout populations have plummeted. So in the Old Man watershed, bull trout are missing from 70% of their historic range. How dramatically and quickly native fish have disappeared is shocking. Bull trout populations especially have plummeted. And I'd like to talk to you about one unique population of lake-dwelling bull trout that existed in the Upper Crow's Nest watershed to give you a cautionary tale about this. This watershed has seen many changes, including historical levels of grazing, initiated with the theory that it would reduce forest fires. Logging for mine props, for railway ties and construction materials was extensive, but It was the transformation of the watershed, the cumulative effects of logging, mining, grazing, transportation networks, and residential development that did in the bull trout population. Bull trout could handle the natural challenges to their survival. What they couldn't handle was the extra ones imposed upon them by us. Their disappearance ended 10,000 years of residency in the Upper Crow's Nest watershed, and it was over in less than one human lifespan. That was then. You have the scale of our endeavors, especially our logging footprint in orders of magnitude, is larger today than it was 50 to 100 years ago. We have predictive tools, cumulative effects assessment, and better understanding of ecology, yet we seem unable to connect the dots, especially with the business-as-usual model to maintain native trout populations. And you can see that most bull trout populations through the province are in some degree of peril. Researchers can predict the chances of native fish disappearing, and two evident things are the amount of the watershed that's harvested and the road density. And in particular, modeling shows that there's an inflection point at about 0.6 kilometers of road per kilometer squared of landscape. Beyond this point, the integrity of the population of trout diminishes. In the Castle watershed, I want you to remember, 0.6 kilometers of road per kilometer squared of landscape. This is what we have in terms of road density in the Castle watershed. This is where some of the logging is happening now, and this is where logging will continue to with the prescription for logging in the Castle. Now, I don't have road density for the Upper Old Man, but what I do have is the number of stream crossings. And actually, road density analysis might underestimate stream crossings. So it's even worse in the Upper Old Man. So road density or stream crossings helps us understand the industrial footprint and the impact on trout. And it's all about gravity. Logging is a land use disturbance that creates erosion and produces sediment. The amount of sediment that's produced is far in excess of what happens naturally, and especially it's far in excess of what trout adapted to in terms of about 10,000 years of occupancy. So the bigger the footprint, the more that sediment is produced. In addition, logging requires a transportation network. That means more sediment. That network persists. That means more sediment. And the problems created by the footprint of logging persist long after the last load of logs leaves the forest. Sediment bleeds from the roads and trails. There are catastrophic failures of the transportation infrastructure. Sediment continues to move from cut blocks. And it continues to move down unreclaimed trails. The one on this side, that equates to about 2 tons of soil every 2 paces moving down slope. 2 tons of soil. And of course, motorized recreation and access continues to generate new sources of sediment. Every spring with snow melt, and after every rainfall event, the sediment continues to move downstream. And once it reaches a receding stream, there the sediment lingers, creating a legacy of issues. It fills in the spaces between the gravel substrate. It interferes with aquatic insect ecology. That's the basic building blocks of fish flesh. It smothers fish eggs, which reduces the reproductive success of trout. Sediment reduces habitat for young fish that hide in the interstitial spaces of the substrate. And also the sediment cements substrates together, creating an impermeable barrier preventing trout from building reds, or the nest in which they lay their eggs. And that sediment can also move down in the substrate column to depths where it interferes with the intergravular movement of water. So what I'm telling you is that sediment can persist within streams for decades, maybe even centuries after logging. And an enduring legacy is the loss of native trout. Will we have to look at archival photographs to remind ourselves what we once had? So what to do? Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to shift from, on the one side is stumps, sawdust, and sediment, and the other side is water, biodiversity, protected areas, aesthetics, non-motorized recreation, and space. So it's about choice. We have to reduce our footprint. We have taken so much out of the forest that now we have to reinvest in our forests. We need access management to reduce motorized traffic. We need in-block road reclamation within the logging cut blocks. We need timely road abandonment and reclamation. And we need landscape logging, not logging the landscape. We need to plan for natural processes, and Marie has already provided us an exemplary exhibition of why that's necessary. We also need to engage in ecosystem planning. And, you know, this is called land use planning in Montana, but it could be called timber harvest planning in Alberta. And instead of where do we log tomorrow, the question should be, should we log? So we need a response that's more than fiber and traditional economic outputs. We need a model of the anticipated effects of all of our management decisions before we do them. We need to involve the public in meaningful, timely ways. We need to recognize both the multiple and intrinsic social values of the forest. And we need to sustain all parts of the forest, especially the vulnerable pieces. What are some of the vulnerable pieces? The fish that are the indicators of overall watershed management. And we need to think beyond the forest to downstream values. We need to measure. We need to monitor. We need to adapt. We need to create ecological benchmarks from which changes can be measured. We need to consistently monitor key variables as a test of performance. And we need to change land use as a function of the monitoring results. We need to measure our successes differently. We need to measure our successes with a broad range of metrics, especially non-economic measures. Water quality, biodiversity, landscape aesthetics, and then ask, is logging the method to achieve the desired results? The forests of the eastern slopes of the Rocky Mountains were viewed by early policymakers as pivotal to the settlement and well-being of the area that was later to be known as Alberta and Saskatchewan. Hence, the forests were reserved for water, for local timber needs, and to sustain wildlife. How quickly is history forgotten or ignored? The need for watershed protection and maintenance of biodiversity is not an artifact of history, but a compelling need for today and for the future. We need to learn to take our wealth from forests in less damaging ways, and to realize that wealth is also found in using them for more than fiber. An intact forest is a symbol of progress. A landscape covered with stumps is not. We can do better. We need to do better. Thank you.